The Masterclass podcast is made on the unceded land of the Wurundjeri, Woiwurrung and Bunurong people. We recognise First Nations people as the original owners and custodians of the lands and waterways across the Australian continent. We pay our respects to elders past and present. Always was, always will be Aboriginal land.
Your voice is such a personal quality. It goes to your personality. It's very unique. It's like your own oral fingerprint.
I'm feeling very self-conscious about my voice.
No, don't at all. Don't.
And also thinking, my God, where were you when I needed voice training all those years ago?
So a good broadcaster is somebody who makes you feel that they're talking to you only. Authority comes from being comfortable in front of a microphone and knowing what you're on about. Hello, I'm Tamara O'Dyan, a broadcaster with the ABC and a professional voice coach. And today I'm going to give you a masterclass in how to use your voice in audio journalism.
Hello and welcome to Season 3 of the Masterclass podcast. I'm Louisa Lim, and I teach audio journalism and podcasting at the University of Melbourne. Every episode, we're speaking to a master of journalism to talk about one aspect of their work. Today, we're talking to Tamara O'Dyan, who currently presents the nightly news on ABC TV in Victoria and has been a professional voice coach for 15 years. Tamara, is there even such a thing as a good voice for audio?
There is, and I think everybody within themselves knows what the answers are for a good voice. All you need to do is take your broadcasting hat off and put your podcast program listening hat on and just pick apart what it is that you like about your favourite voices. What are those people doing? What do they bring to the microphone? And effectively, you can cherry pick those qualities and try and wrap that into your own delivery, of course, sounding like yourself and recognisable as yourself while you go along.
Let's hear how you do it. I think we've got a clip of you anchoring the ABC TV news.
Tonight, a new search south of Ballarat fails to find any trace of Samantha Murphy. Also tonight, cost to cancel, the big hit to taxpayers for scrapping the games. A plan to trial the electronic monitoring of young people charged with serious offences, and a rock star reception for Melbourne's Formula One young gun. Good evening, Tamara O'Dyan with ABC News. A
reinvigorated. So you sound so sort of authoritative and cool. I mean, did you always sound like that?
No, I didn't. And in fact, I fell into news reading very much by accident. It was one of those things. I was working as a reporter on an early morning breakfast program that was broadcast across the Asia Pacific region. So I started work at 4 a.m. each day. It was a very small team and our presenter was sick. And it was that classic thing of you get in there, there's no one else to do it. So had to learn very, very quickly to deal with advice about my voice, unsolicited advice about my voice as soon as I was on air. And your voice is such a personal quality. It goes to your personality. It's very unique. It's like your own oral fingerprint. So having somebody come up and say, oh, Tam, yep, that was good. It just sounded a bit flat, is really hard not to take personally. So I learned very quickly that people are not shy in giving you criticism about such a personal quality. So I took myself off and did some research around what makes a great voice. And at the time in the ABC Melbourne newsroom, we didn't have any voice training. None of us knew what the hell we were doing. And we were all just going blind in terms of doing it by feel, really, and trying to figure out what worked. It wasn't working, so I went off and did a Certificate 4 in training and assessment and wrote a course that's pegged to the national training standard that I've been rolling out across the ABC ever since. So I work with our cadets and very much teach them that you need to sound like yourself on air. You need to be recognisable to your friends and family. There's nothing worse than speaking to somebody, having a normal conversation and then seeing them on air and suddenly they're this complete other persona. There's no authority or credibility in that because audiences can spot a phony from a mile away. So you'll note that the voice that I use on the news or on the radio has all of the elements that I'm using while I'm talking to you now. It just has a layer of polish over the top in terms of how I slightly sharpen my enunciation.
That's so interesting because when I started, and I'm not going to say how many years ago that was, and I was trained at the BBC, and there was very much this sense that in order to be authoritative, you needed to sound male. You know, people were saying, pitch your voice lower, you know, sound authoritative. Mm. And that's not the advice that you're giving, is it?
Not at all. And in fact, we get a lot of young female graduates come to broadcast and they're having to rearrange their face to try and pitch down. If you have to do something to your facial expressions, that's not a natural sound. It sounds ridiculous. And it also, if you speak in an overly deep voice that's more comfortable or natural for you, you actually end up causing yourself damage vocally in the long term. So for the young female broadcasters who do come through and they're, you know, invariably told by some old white bloke, gee, you sound young, the answer to that is, well, I am young, actually. Women's voices tend to mellow as they get older. So by about the age of 30, your voice will start to settle. For men, it's a lot sooner. It happens in puberty. But don't ever be tempted to think that vocal depth equals authority. That's not something that you can fake. Authority comes from being comfortable in front of a microphone and knowing what you're on about. If you don't, if there's any uncertainty in your voice, it absolutely flows through to your intonation. If you're not comfortable with hearing yourself back, get comfortable. You carry around a recording device in your pocket every day in the form of your phone. You can practice your broadcast voice at any time of the day or night and get comfortable with listening back to it. It's so important that you take the cringe out of it. And I'm saying this from experience. I never used to listen to my voice back. It used to make me flinch every time I heard it booming across the newsroom coming from an edit suite. But you can't make informed decisions about how to improve the way you sound unless you take the heat out of it. Then you can start listening for what actually is working with my voice. What can I keep in my toolkit? And then what do I need to get rid of and improve?
And what about the really vexed issue of vocal fry? So a lot of young people have this sort of creaky voice, and I think we can play a clip.
That's right. I realized, Chuck, that you're just doing vocal fry.
Yeah.
I have no ear for it.
Thought, backing, little things, being our lives by dark thoughts to the West Coast.
What kind of advice do you give cadets who come to you with vocal fry? Is that something that they need to work on?
Absolutely. And interestingly, it's something that's really easy to fix. It's just a vocal habit, and it all comes down to the way that you're sitting or standing and the way that you're breathing as well. So it's not a speech impediment of any description. It's just a habit. So a vocal fry is essentially where you are squashing the back of your throat, and on the lower notes in particular, you're throwing less air behind the sound waves being produced in your vocal cords here in your voice box. So instead of bending down and sort of letting your voice start crackling like this, you sit up, you put your shoulders back, not tense, but you know, keeping the possibility of movement in your upper body, and you actually throw a bit more air behind the sound. You can hear my voice getting rounder and more fuller now that I'm supporting it with more air.
I am looking at your beautiful posture and it's making me sit up a lot straighter than I normally do. How important is posture?
It is absolutely the backbone to a very good broadcast sound. So my natural sitting position when I'm sitting writing a script at my desk at work is nothing like this. I'm very C-shaped in terms of the way that my spine curves. I'll usually throw my right ankle underneath my left thigh and just sort of sit there hunched over with my chin jutting out a little bit. Now, if I was trying to make a nice, strong broadcast sound, that would be nigh on impossible. It's so important with your posture that you work from the ground up, kind of like a golfer would when they go to tee off. So if you're sitting, you want your feet hip-width apart, parallel to each other, not crossed over, tucked underneath the chair or put out in front of you. Then you want your knees at a right angle over the top.
I'm already
I'm watching you, Louisa. I'm very impressed. And then your hips are also at a right angle. So if you have an adjustable chair, make sure that you're able to use those to make sure that you're not sitting too high or too low. So your hips and knees are at a right angle, and those legs are acting as a stabilizer, really, for the weight of your upper body. You're putting the weight of your upper body into your sit bones. If you don't know where they are, put a hand under each bum cheek and you'll feel two big knuckles of bone. And you're balancing your upper body weight on those sit bones with your legs stabilizing. It's really important not to fix too rigidly in that posture, because any tension in the body flows through to the sound of your voice. So if you're here with your shoulders bunched up, you can really hear my voice tends to go up a little bit in pitch. So let everything relax, roll your shoulders around a few times. And as I said earlier, keep the possibility of movement in your upper body. So if you are a natural gesticulator like I am while I'm sitting here explaining things to you, you should be relaxed enough to be able to do that. Because if you're using your body to tell a story, it always helps with the sound of your voice. Same thing with your head. You might be a head talker. You might open your eyes wider when you're explaining something. You might furrow your brow. Keep all of that available to you when it comes to your on-air storytelling.
Maybe we can talk a bit about that difference between doing news and doing podcasts and features mm-hmm. and other kinds of output. I think we've got a clip of you hosting Life Matters.
A murder at a clergy house, a body at the border, the ruthless contemplations of a killer. Crime, at least on TV and podcasts, has a really broad appeal. We've been reading in the Life Matters office that the late Queen Elizabeth was reportedly a big fan of Line of Duty too. But why are shows like Scandi thriller The Bridge, the podcast The Teacher's Pet, and adaptations of the works of Agatha Christie so incredibly popular, when at the same time, real crime rates are actually falling?
So there's a real warmth in your Life Matters style that's not there in the news style. How do you do that?
Well, to start with, it's very different content. So the news set in particular, you just see me in this sort of square or rectangular frame, and I'm sitting at a desk and I'm dressed up a lot more than I am now, with a lot more makeup on and quite big hair. But in that setting, I'm generally talking about pretty sad, grim news. So it's serious. Whereas on the radio, there's a lot more levity. So you can bring that to your voice. And in fact, before I did that particular stint on Life Matters on RN, the producers had said, now, your voice is great, but we just want you to lose that news edge if possible. When you're broadcasting, it does not help to think of this vast sea of eyeballs watching or ears listening, because it just makes you nervous and it really is very difficult to then try and connect with your audience. Listening to a podcast or a radio program or even watching the news on TV is quite a solitary activity, even if you're doing it with other people in the room. So a good broadcaster is somebody who makes you feel that they're talking to you only. So in essence, as the broadcaster, you need to reach through that microphone and try and connect with your audience, not just with the content, but with them as a listener as well. So I took that one step further and thought, okay, well, if I'm only talking to one person when I'm broadcasting, who is that person going to be? And I had to think about it and landed on my best friend. So I used my phone, took a screenshot of her on my phone, put it next to the microphone and the computer in the studio and told her that whole show. Rather than thinking about the audience, I treated her as my singular audience. And you can see the difference in my delivery from that particular clip that you played to my nightly news voice. It's all still there, but it's more relaxed. It's more chatty. It's like we're sitting in a cafe talking to each other, albeit in quite an animated fashion about Scandi films and Scandi crime shows. So after we did that particular show, the producers went, oh my God, that was great. You sounded so relaxed. And I held up my phone and showed them a picture of her and said, well, this is why, because I was really trying to pitch it at somebody who I knew very well.
It's such a good trick. I think one problem that I've sometimes had is that when I've recorded myself and I listen back and I just sound a bit flat. Because I'm trying to be conversational, but it just doesn't quite work. But then you try and amp it up and you sound really over the top. So how do you deal with that?
There is a happy middle ground in there somewhere. I find that the sweet spot is just at the point that you feel like you're pushing it a little bit too far, where it's a bit too much ham. That's about right. Because you can be in the moment and thinking, well, I'm doing everything I can with my voice to get as much energy and, you know, conversational delivery in there. And then you listen back and go, oh, I could have actually done that a little bit more. So again, it harks back to that idea of listening back to yourself as often as you can. Talk into your phone just off the cuff about your day. What have you done today? What have you liked? What have you hated? Listen back for what you do with your intonation to make things interesting. You can boil it all down generally to three words starting with P, happily. The first P is P for pace. Keep in mind that regular conversational delivery never flows at a robotic, sort of consistent pace, whereas when we're reading a script, suddenly that flies out the window and everything becomes very measured and very obvious that you're reading something. If you're telling a story to a friend, generally, if something's really important, you'll tend to slow it down slightly. Any other little details that need to be there, you'll skate over the top of them. I've sort of hammed that up for you a little bit, but just demonstrating that your pace can ebb and flow multiple times while you're telling a story. I find that's one thing that you can do with your broadcast delivery that's an absolute game changer. If you can get your pace to move in and out, suddenly you're starting to sound a lot more like yourself. The second P is P for pause. We pause all the time when we're talking to other people for an opportunity to marshal our thoughts for where we're going next, for a little bit of drama, maybe. If we're listing things, we might do that as well. There's umpteen different opportunities to pause when you're telling stories. Don't be afraid to lean into that half a beat of silence when you're broadcasting as well. I actually build pauses into the paragraphs that I'm reading on the news. I break each sentence down into more digestible chunks. Sometimes you can use pauses very, very effectively to verbally highlight a really important part of a sentence. So, for example, I was on the court round for a long time as a court reporter at the ABC, had to do a case, very horrible, sad case about a man killing his children. So, first time we ever saw him in the dock, the line was, the defendant facing three counts of murder sat quietly in the dock. You can give a line like that a lot more impact with two strategically placed pauses. The defendant facing three counts of murder sat quietly in the dock. It gives you a moment just to pick up on what I've said there and register three counts of murder. And it's actually quite a compelling way to speak, and it keeps your audience with you. So pauses are quite transformative too in your broadcast voice. The third P is P for pitch. When you're listening back to yourself telling stories about your own day, look at what your notes do. Generally, you lean right into the higher notes when you're telling stories. But a lot of times people, when they start broadcasting news in particular, they'll want to sit down in their lower register. But what that ends up doing is making you sound quite monotone. Don't be afraid of the high notes. You can really emphasize things like I just did. You emphasize words with a higher pitch as well. That's what you do in natural speech. That's what you want to try and bring to your broadcast voice as well, so that you're using all of the notes in your range as opposed to just this squished lower range of notes here. The more you can do that, the more confident, natural, and conversational you'll sound. And then it's all about just bringing that polish to your delivery as well.
So pace, pause, and pitch.
Yes, they're the three P's. And I'm doing all of that while I'm talking to you right now.
You make it sound so simple, but how do you bring that to your scripts? Do you actually mark them?
Mm-hmm, I do. I'm not that prescriptive when it comes to, okay, well, here I'm going to slow down and speed up there or use a high note or low note. I find if you can mark up your scripts for meaning, so you mine every sentence for the meaning-laden words and do whatever you need to prompt your brain, show yourself that, okay, well, here's where the meaning lies in this particular sentence. I only have a certain way of formatting available to me in our system that we use at the ABC that speaks to the auto-cue machine, and that is bold and underline. That's what translates, so that's what I use. And sometimes it'll be single words, other times it'll be whole phrases. So once I've identified where all the meaning lies and I've broken up my sentences into digestible chunks and built some little half-beat pauses, pauses in there, I will use a combination of those three P's and lean into those meaning-laden words with my pace, pauses, and pitch.
What advice do you give students who have English as a second language? I mean, that's an added layer of complication.
It is, but I would urge you to keep in mind that you need to sound like yourself. That's how you mark yourself apart from everybody else, is having your own sound. So for me, I use my news voice to some extent every day when I'm talking to people. I can be dropping my kids off at school and I don't look anything like I do on the news, and I'll be chatting to someone I don't know and they'll say, "Have we spoken to each other before? Your voice is really familiar to me." And that's a sign that I'm doing it right. So if you do have an accent, really the only rule of thumb, I would say, at the ABC at least, is as long as you are understood, that's fine. We've got all sorts of accents at the ABC, and you are not advised at all to try and sound like someone else.
If you crystallize that all down, what are your two top tips for our students in how to use their voices effectively?
Get used to listening to what you sound like. The first time you hear yourself back, generally, it will be horror and cringe. You'll go, "Oh my God, do I really sound like that?" And the short answer is, yeah, you do. You sound different to how everybody else hears you, because by the time your voice reaches your ears, it's muffled through the tissues and the sinew and everything in your face and your ears. So how you sound on a recording is absolutely how everybody else hears you. So desensitize yourself to that. Voice is very much a reward for effort proposition. The more you do it and the more you listen, the better you get. And it's not a matter of just doing one session of voice training at the infancy of your broadcasting career, ticking that box and saying, "Yep, I've done my voice training, I'm good." It's something that you have to check in with constantly. So I do what's called an air check, listen back to my own content regularly, once a week, listen to a few intros. I'm not looking at myself to see what I look like on TV. I'm listening for how my listener is receiving my voice. Am I doing anything distracting? Are they going to be able to fasten on to something that I'm doing with my delivery so they're not listening to what I'm telling them? So listen back to yourself all the time. And please mine your scripts for meaning. Figure out, well, what is this story actually about? What are the main ideas I'm trying to get across here? Throughout your career in news, there'll be a whole range of different topics that you have to speak to. It's not a cookie cutter approach in terms of, well, this is my news voice, this is what I'm going to use for everything.
I'm feeling very self-conscious about
my
voice.
No, don't at all. Don't.
And also thinking, my God, where were you when I needed voice training all those years ago? And I think you've got a task for our students.
Yes, a good starting place is to do a bit of a brain dump about, well, what do I like in a broadcast voice? And it's not just as simple as, oh, they've just got a nice voice. You need to pick apart what they're doing with a really nice voice. So let's talk about my favourite voice on the ABC. It's a journalist called Ben Knight. He has filed for Four Corners, News, all sorts of different programs. He's been a correspondent overseas.
But Britain soon realised that to actually make that happen would mean massive forced transfers of people and land, and especially of Arabs, and they rejected.
So if I was to pick apart what I love about Ben's voice, I would write words like natural, conversational, warm, funny, personality, things like that. And I'd tease out what it is that works for my ears that he's doing with his voice. Then, after I've figured out what I like in a voice, I then think about what's like nails down a blackboard for me listening to people. It might be, for you, vocal fry. It might be really tense, high-pitched voices. It might be really dull, monotone. It might be mouth sound, like kind of cotton mouth, which I know it's gross. So write those lists down, whether you do it by hand on a piece of paper or you tap them into notes on your phone. It's important to keep that with you, though. You can take that after uni with you into whatever your role is speaking for a living and check back on how many of the things in the like list that I've written can I check off? How many of the things in the dislike list am I guilty of doing on a regular basis? Generally, we all know what we like and what we don't. Use those opinions to inform your own delivery.
That was Tamara O'Dine, ABC broadcaster and professional voice coach. The Masterclass is produced by Dylan Bird and myself. It's edited by Dylan Bird. Sound design and post-production by John Tia. The original concept is by Anders Furs. The theme tune is by Susie Wilkins. It was partially funded by the GEM Scott Trust, and it's all brought to you by the Centre for Advancing Journalism at the University of Melbourne.